Final case of the day, U.S. v. Crumwitty, 084081.
Here goes our crowd.
No reflection on you all, counsel, that it's an empty courtroom. All right. Is that Ms. or Mrs. Christensen? Ms. All right.
May it please the court, counsel. Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Joanna Christensen, and I represent the appellant, Jason Crumwitty, in this case. The issue on appeal is the enhancement, the four-level enhancement under 2K2.1B6 for possession of a firearm connection with another felony offense. This enhancement has been giving courts some trouble since it was implemented, both because the in connection with was unclear, and the another felony offense prong was unclear. The in connection with the sentencing guidelines changed and clarified what they meant by in connection with. However, this case is not an in connection with case. It's another felony offense case. And the question then is whether burglary in this case was another felony offense separate and distinct from the theft of firearms from a licensed dealer. Application Note 14C, which defines another felony offense, is for the purposes of B6, means any federal, state, or local offense other than the firearms offense. In this case, there is no offense, or the offense that purportedly was relied on by the district court is not a separate offense from the 922U conviction for theft from a federally licensed dealer. The government's reading of the guideline language would render the phrase another felony offense superfluous in this case because it's asking all this court to find is that it was in connection with. As this court is aware, the Sazak's case, if I'm saying that correctly, dealt with another felony offense, the another felony offense prong, and found that in cases such as this, the enhancement did not apply because there was no separate in time or a distinction of conduct. There was no distinction of conduct between the underlying offense of conviction and the other felony offense required by the guideline. The government argues that essentially Sazak's has been overruled by the guidelines change in commentary. However, that case was very clear that it was dealing with the prong another felony offense, not the in connection with prong. In fact, this court agreed with the other circuits on that matter of the in connection with analysis that the Sentencing Guideline Commission ultimately adopted. And just recently, this court reaffirmed in Hill that it is not relevant whether the two offenses occur at the same time or have the same causal relationship, but whether they are based on the same conduct. And in this case, they are based on the same conduct, the theft from the guns and knives store that resulted in two convictions, one under 922U and one under 922G1.
But this was a burglary as well, wasn't it? Not charged, but the entry into the store was a burglary.
Correct. It was not charged.
There are reasons to go into a gun store in addition to stealing guns. There may be money there. There may be furniture, computers, what have you.
Sure. And the government argues that there are many ways that Mr. Crumwitty could have committed this offense that would allow this enhancement to be used. However, that's not the way he committed the offense. And while there is a slight distinction between burglary, which would be most likely a state offense, and theft from a federally licensed firearm dealer, which does not require the breaking and entering, Sazak's does not make that distinction and holds that they are very closely related, too closely related to be considered another felony offense. In order to make that holding, this court would have to...
But for the burglary, there doesn't need to be a theft.
Correct.
For the theft, there doesn't need to be a burglary.
Correct. But, again, this court would have to overrule Sazak's in that sense because it's the exact same conduct, although in Sazak's it was a conspiracy to commit theft from a federally licensed firearms dealer. but the underlying conduct the district court relied on was burglary. So they mesh enough for the Sazak's court to make the decision that they were too close for the enhancement to apply and be considered another felony offense for the purposes of that subsection. Again, all the cases relied on by the government are simple possession cases. The only case which deals with this issue that's on point is Sazak's, the 922U case, which is a theft from a federally licensed firearm dealer. Of course, if it was just a felon in possession case, then it would be another offense because the underlying offense would not be covered by the offense conduct if you're simply convicted of a 922G offense. Excuse me. And finally, the government makes an argument that Mr. Crumwitty did receive a below-guideline sentence, and for that reason, he received a sentence within the guidelines that would have applied had he not received the four-level enhancement. However, the judge did not base her reasons for giving him a below-guideline sentence on the enhancement or the possibility that the enhancement should not apply. Judge Crabb based her findings on his intoxication at the time of the offense, his personal characteristics, including the fact that he suffers from addiction to alcohol and a serious addiction to alcohol, his criminal history, and the nature of the offense, that it was unlikely to be terribly successful given the fact that he attempted to ride a bicycle away with 34 guns. And that was the reason she went below the guidelines. Therefore, if the court were to find that the district court should not have given the four-level enhancement, thereby lowering the guideline range, Judge Crabb may very well again decide that the mitigating factors in this case warrant a still below-guideline sentence. The government also argues that Mr. Crumwitty had to plead guilty to both offenses because the guideline range would not have encompassed all of the he would have been capped at 120 months if he had only pled guilty to the felon in possession. That, in that case, it would be seemingly inconsistent for a defendant to plead guilty to one and get a higher sentence and plead guilty to two and get a lower sentence. However, the guidelines function to interpret statutory maximums and minimums and the defendant's criminal history in a way that relates to both prongs and punishes the distinct offender for his conduct. Mr. Crumley's criminal history was higher, so therefore he would have been capped, but another defendant in the same situation would not have been capped, and that should not be a consideration in this case. I see that I am into my rebuttal time, and unless the court has questions, I will reserve the remainder of my time.
All right, Ms. Christensen. Mr. Anderson?
Good afternoon. My name is Robert Anderson. I'm an assistant United States attorney representing the government in this case, having that privilege. The judge here did not procedurally err in sentencing Mr. Crumwitty. She considered the advisory guidelines. She weighed the factors under 3553A and ultimately gave him a sentence, a downward variance from the advisory guidelines in the very range that the defendant advocated that his sentence should be within. In this sense, when we do reach the reasonableness argument, which I'll get to in a minute, it should really be considered that the defendant, having received a sentence in the very range he advocated, may have waived his argument about the reasonableness of the sentence. How can a sentence be unreasonable when that's what he advocated the court, the range he sentenced him in within? But first he challenges how the judge arrived at the guideline calculations, which ultimately she deviated from to give him the sentence under 3553A. In respect to calculating those guidelines, the judge calculated his guidelines and consistent with the very plain language and the directives of the commentary of 2K 2.1B6, she applied the guideline commentary exactly as it was worded. In that commentary, which was passed in 2006 after the Sazak's case, it says, even if you possess this firearm in connection with a burglary, during a burglary, even if you possess it during that contemporaneous burglary, this enhancement applies. And it goes on in the reasoning of the Guideline Commission and observed by Judge Crabb as well in her, at the sentencing. The Guideline Commission stated the reason that they were doing this, carving out this exception, special niche for both burglary and they also mentioned drug offenses as well, was because of the high likelihood or potential that the gun would be used in another felony offense.
Well, Zacchus can still stand, but there is this exception. Would that be your view?
Yes, it Sazek still stands. If perhaps I was thinking of this, if there were another scenario apart from burglary under which he stole firearms from a licensed firearms dealer, perhaps by giving a counterfeit check to the firearms dealer and taking the gun by fraud, stealing from the firearms dealer, and that constituting another felony offense, but that being part of the very same offense of stealing a firearm, Sazek's would apply to say that you should not receive the enhancement in that situation. There may be others. But here the guideline is very clear and unequivocal, and that's the way she applied it. Mr. Krumwidi erroneously relies on the judicial authority as it existed up to and before 2006. If we were arguing this case in 2005, 2006, we would be on completely different ground. But that amendment in 2006 changed, resolved the split of authority between the circuits, which the Seventh Circuit was on one side, other circuits were on the other. It resolved that split of authority and clarified that it was to apply this way. He was sentenced under the 2008 Guidelines Manual.
Do we have any evidence? It appears that it was certainly done in response to the circuit split, but is there anything in the legislative history that suggests that this comment 13 dealt with that split, circuit split?
I had, in looking at the guideline commentary, and looking at the guideline, the appendix to the guideline, which was, I think this was Amendment 691, if I'm not mistaken, in there it mentioned that this was in response to the circuit split, because obviously there was a circuit split. And then you can see, even though recently, earlier this year in the Hill case.
Where did you say that was again? Because we tried to.
It is Amendment 691. And I'm, if I'm not mistaken, I believe it's in there where it describes, or it talks about the circuit split and addressing the circuit split. It's in Appendix C of the guidelines. And even in the, if you look at the transcript of the sentencing, Judge Crabb also independently had referred to her observing that this amendment had been passed apparently in response to the circuit split. But that circuit
Thank
split...
You. That's helpful because we didn't see it in the legislative history. That's what we checked. Thank you.
Okay. Even now, in the Sazek's opinion, for instance, the impact that this has had, in Sazek's opinion, this court disagreed with the Fifth Circuit decision in Armstead. However, then earlier this year in the Hill case, Hill and Lumsden case cited in my brief, which addressed the 2K2.1B6 enhancement, the application of it was a challenge on slightly different grounds, but it addressed that, and it favorably referred to the Armstead opinion out of the Fifth Circuit with respect to the distinction of how different manners in which a burglary, you can commit a burglary without necessarily possessing guns or stealing the guns, and vice versa, you can possess or steal guns without necessarily committing a burglary. So because the court did apply the unequivocal directive of the guidelines, it did not procedurally err in sentencing Mr. Krumwidi. Therefore, going on to the reasonableness aspect, Mr. Krumwidi, the court offered him and gave him the opportunity to argue the factors under 3553A. He not only had the opportunity, his counsel submitted a sentencing memorandum arguing that even if the enhancement applied, a sentence under 100, sentence within 120 to 150 months would be appropriate in this case, would be more than adequate, they said. At sentencing, they then made the same verbal argument that a sentence in that range would be appropriate, although they advocated a sentence at the bottom of that. It's clear from the record that Mr. Cromartie's arguments were successful in convincing the court to sentence him within that range, that he proposed, 120 to 150, as opposed to the 168 to 210. The court addressed, if you look at the transcript, the court addressed the 3553A factors, the nature of the offense, the defendant's criminal history, his record, which was extensive, his age, his intoxication at the time of the offense, and the lack of sophistication with which he committed the crime, and his attempted flight from the police. The court did, contrary to counsel's assertion, the court did acknowledge the piling on effect and her observation of this seems like it is perhaps his piling on effect. In the transcript, I believe, Appellate's Appendix, page 6, is that page of the transcript where it refers to that. And she gave meaningful consideration to the factors under 3553A, and it's evident in the choice that evident in the choice she made in imposing a sentence below, substantially below the advisory guidelines. Therefore, Mr. Cromwidy hasn't demonstrated that his below-guideline sentence was unreasonable in any sense when measured by the factors of 3553A, his extensive criminal history, the fact he committed this offense while on supervision, and especially in light of the fact that he's the one that at sentencing requested a range within that a sentence within that range of 120 to 150 months. Had, you know, many of the other, I want to observe, in looking at all these other cases that ever dealt with B6, a lot of them simply avoided the conflict here by a defendant pleading only to being a felon in possession of firearms when they actually committed a burglary as well. Here we couldn't allow that to happen because Mr. Cromwidy's criminal history was so high, we had to have the conviction on both statutory offenses. Even with both those statutory offenses, had he not pled and gotten acceptance of responsibility, his guidelines would have been in excess of the 20 years of both those statutory maximums. So that in the context of noting that this is a reasonable sentence that the court imposed. So regardless of the calculations, the guideline calculations, they were advisory. Through the variance that the court employed, the court effectively muted the effect of that enhancement in any event, giving him a sentence within the range he asked for. So this court can easily conclude that there was no error here. She applied the guidelines exactly as she should. And even if there were, that error would be harmless because he got what he asked for in any event, a sentence in that lower range. Unless there are any other questions, that's all. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Ms. Christensen,
how much?
2.5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors. I just wanted to, it is Amendment 691, and it's in my brief at page 12. I know it's also in the government's brief. And the amendment language in Appendix C is the amendment was intended to clarify the application of the four-level increase with respect to the use of in connection with burglary and drug offenses. It does not address the another felony offense prong, which is kind of the crux of our argument, that there are two problems with this enhancement's language, and one is the in connection with that has seemingly been resolved by the Sentencing Commission, and the other one is another felony offense, which was not addressed in Amendment 691. I would like to comment on the government's seemingly confusion of Gall and Rita and the process in which this court reviews sentences. Our argument is that it was procedurally unreasonable, the first step under Gall and Rita, that the guidelines were not correctly calculated. And because our argument focuses on that, then obviously if we are correct in that, it's remanded. We're not necessarily making a full-on substantive reasonableness argument because Mr. Cromwidy did receive below the guidelines. If we are wrong about the procedural argument, then it would be very difficult to challenge the substantive reasonableness. So the focus is on the procedure in this case, the way the guidelines were calculated by the district court, and our argument, of course, is that they were miscalculated based on the Sazak's opinion, which was reaffirmed in Hill this year, using the same guidelines that Mr. Cromwidy's case involved, and holding that it was not relevant, again, whether they occur simultaneously or have a relationship, but whether they are based on the same conduct. None of the Sazak's case, which is nearly identical in the conduct, his underlying offense is based on the same conduct that the enhancement is. and therefore should not have been applied in his case. And we respectfully request this court remand for resentencing. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, for your fine arguments. That concludes the business of the court for the day. We'll stand in recess.